we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
The most important words in medicine today are not words that you might expect. I think many folks visit their physician in pursuit of an answer. And many times an answer is given. But sometimes, especially when a disease is known or unknown, that answer may not be known at the time. And I will say that at a recent Senate hearing for the state of California, which might surprise you that they would have invited this individual, despite the fact that his credentials are basically one of incredible history of vaccine and immunology, and even to the fact that he, compared to myself and Dr. Tankersley, may be a little more pro-vaccine than we are. I think the words that he had to say at that hearing were quite important. And those words are, again, this is Dr. Michael Osterholm speaking at the Senate Hearing Committee.
I think the three most important words that I own today in all of the work that I'm doing in COVID and frankly throughout my career right now is I don't know. And I think that credibility piece is what do you know? I think we have far too often felt the need to have all the answers. And we needed a much greater sense of humility. Inability to, again, that creative imagination, but also to say we don't know is really a very important point. I would say that was true with respiratory protection. We went through periods where, frankly, the information we gave to the public was not scientifically correct. But because, again, people wanted to hone in on an answer without having all the facts about what that answer meant. So I would say I don't know is one of the three most important words we own for credibility today.
So given that, those words are likely words that you probably never wanted associated with your physician when you visit him. But I will say that those words are powerful and they are important, especially when you're talking about something that might affect your life or your family members' lives for years to come. So Stuart, give me a little insight on what you think about those words and how they relate to what would be a typical patient interaction. And sometimes when, as a physician, you don't have the answer.
Dr. Osterholm, he made one of the statements he said was because people wanted to hone in on an answer without having all the facts about what that answer meant. And I think the people he's referring to are the doctors, the people we're in charge. We have no humility. We're going to save the day. We're going to come up with the right answer. And they continue to come up with the wrong one. They have done so many things, so many more things wrong than they have done right. And it's amazing that this doctor was allowed to speak before the California Senate. You know, here in Alabama, they don't speak because they don't have hearings in our legislature like most states in the federal government has. But the point is that this guy's admitting the obvious. And how do you get to a point of answering questions when you continuously fall on your own feet and you make mistake after mistake after mistake? How do you get out of that trap? You ask other people questions. And as we know, the biggest travesty of this whole thing is the lack of dialogue, especially in the scientific community. And it's really a show of pride on our culture's part, where the physicians have been the smartest guys in the room. And here they are in a crisis, which they've never trained for. And they're told, you have to give us the answer. So we're just going to swag it. And they are way off target most of the time.
So speaking of things we don't know And again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley on America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead. The CDC in July quietly updated their facts about the mRNA vaccines. You will find this interesting, Stuart. Again, facts prior to July said that these vaccines do not affect or interact with our DNA in any way. And then it also said the mRNA and spike protein don't last long in the body. Well, fast forward to today, and they take out the fact that they do not affect or interact with our DNA, they get rid of in any way. And they change it to do not enter the nucleus. Second of all, they get rid of how long the spike protein lasts in the body completely. Okay, so they have completely changed their definitions and their facts. Yep. Facts that they said it were facts like the, prior to July have now just been erased from the books. So, and they appear
within
like
an hour,
they think,
within 2 hours.
But that seems to be pretty important. Right. They promised us the spike protein is broken down quickly. And
the fact is they probably did know about
it
that.
It seems like
issue.
They should have just said we don't
CDC
know.
Or Pfizer itself, but whoever developed this or Bill Gates, somebody knew that these things last longer because that's why they used the technology and the fake amino acids that they did.
Yeah, the spike protein stabilization technology.
Anybody with any sense should have that's a physician should have read that and said seems reasonable. And instead, Dr. Francis Collins at the NIH and Dr. Fauci, the esteemed Dr. Fauci, the disgraceful Dr. Fauci, were the ones trying to silence them and ostracize them in the scientific community. We found those emails several months ago, and that's why Dr. Collins at least had the humility to retire. Unfortunately, he did it way too late. But the fact is that here he is. The CDC's new guidance on how we should consider prior immunity, for example. Did you know that when you get infected with this virus, it benefits you to have your immune system now builds a memory to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Amazing.
Yeah, it's almost like humans developed immune systems within the last 6 months. But prior to that, we were out there just completely.
immune system. That's right.
Wavering in the wind.
One that functions.
But then again, Stuart, what do vaccines require you to have to even work? It is just interesting that we have finally a MMWR, which most of these have been laughable. And even this one, God knows, it probably is full of political invective. But the fact that 8 times it talks about infection-induced immunity is quite surprising, as well as in the first sentence of this MMWR. And again, in typical fashion, an MMWR comes out that changes policy. And so these things aren't peer reviewed. They are statements or updates from a administrative organization on the executive side that has now become politically compromised. So that means that really, as much as I like the fact that finally we are addressing the infection-induced immunity.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Present.
And my concern is when
it
they
also means that they can just
they're
going to
just in the under the cover of darkness not going to
change
the,
this, right?
You
Stuart,
know, the trusted news initiative, the mainstream media is not going to promote these facts. They're just going to slip them in, and then they're going to make the directives based off of them, so that they can get their other political goals met because they're stuck in this quagmire of their own doing. So one of the things that I've been watching for a few months is, and the dialogue about it in the scientific literature is becoming much more prominent. When Are we going to do an honest assessment of when someone died with COVID, with a SARS-2 virus, or from COVID? And when we get to that, because a lot of states are, a lot of countries, excuse me, are doing this now. I was reading about Japan last night, but which is having a huge spike in hospitalizations and deaths, by the way, even though they're strongly vaccinated. But they're going to start changing the numbers. With over a million deaths from this virus right now in our country, they're going to start changing the numbers. And that's a huge deal. This acknowledgement of what we've known in science all along about the for decades and decades since the field of immunology was developed. Vaccinations have been around for centuries. And so they're just going to start changing things. That's my big concern. They're going to start changing such major facts like who died from COVID. It's going to be, and then when do we get to reflect and say, well, if that's the case, why did we take these actions that have destroyed freedoms, which I want to get into later about Fauci's comments last week. In which he was irritated by a question about our loss of freedoms. But that's the big story. That is the key story. How did we get to the point in our country where we just gave away so many rights and freedoms?
And again, gave them away to who? And who's accountable? That's, again, goes back to that. I think we've talked about it in the past. The problem with the follow the science line is basically it's an abdication of leadership. Because again, Fauci even changes what he said, and no one really needs to, no one seems to call him out on it. He's had a couple interviews that he openly says something like he knew that these things didn't prevent infection or transmission. Yet, again, we have video cameras. They keep information longer.
Right.
Than a couple of months.
Let's rewind. Maybe he thinks all video cameras are like for just a minute here.
Security.
The first time I realized something was really wrong was in March, April 2020, when I found a video of Air Fauci saying it was a 2005 video where he was going down the list of different infectious agents around the world that were threatening to us. And I remember him saying, we don't have to worry about SARS, because in 2003, there had been SARS-1, as we know it. And he said, we don't have to worry about SARS because we have the cure, chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine. And of course, that was based off of a statement from a paper in 2004. But he said that and moved on. In May of 2020, I could no longer find that video. So maybe he's thinking, he's been playing five steps ahead of us throughout this, of course. Maybe he's thinking, I don't have to worry about what I've said before, because what he said, a couple of weeks ago is, I never advocated a lockdown, when in fact the evidence is clear that he certainly did to the president. He just gets to think that he can ignore the reality of all of his lies and deceptions, because that's what they are. And we can't, like you were saying a while ago, who's going to be held to account of all this?
Yeah, and I think that, again, is probably the larger issue that I have with things like QR codes and the lack of actual documentation is it seems like, just like the CDC updating their facts about mRNA vaccines to erase things that are now known, seems like our society is becoming more and more with no historical concept. And that means that everything is just happening right now. And to QR codes that tell you the menu, to QR codes that tell you when the place that you're going is open or closed, it doesn't seem like anybody can be held to account the same way that they were before. It's a lot easier to obviously raise prices when you don't have a history of what the menu looked like previously. It's also a lot easier to say, well, we were closed, when you hit the QR code and it says you're closed. But Amen. That's really where China's going, where they don't have to be held accountable for what they said.
What I said before doesn't matter, but everything you say, and to the point that we're going to hire 87,000 new IRS agents to come and get everything we can from you. It is it's a scary consideration. Yeah, 87,000 of them are coming after every document we can give them.
Yeah, they want us to keep record of what we did, but not the other way around.
Right. Talk to Gates.
We might just tell them, well, actually, I QR coded that. All right. Well, we will be back. I actually have on the way back in a monologue that I think is very prescient and explains a lot in terms of the mentality that I think the people have to go through to understand what's going on. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley. This is America Out Loud Pulse. We'll be back.
All right. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
This is Dr. Stuart Tankersley with Dr. Jordan Vaughn of ConcernedDoctors.org on America Out Loud Pulse. Welcome back. Jordan, I think this clip we're about to play of Dr. Neil Oliver is very important. This guy really, you want to like the guy. I don't know if you have a problem in listening to this guy, and we've listened to several videos of him before, but if you have a problem not wanting to listen to this guy, let us encourage you to check yourself, because he, like we, don't view you as the enemy. We know who our enemy is and we win, but you've been wrong. We've not been perfectly right about this, but we've been, it's by the grace of the Lord, humble enough to come up with an honesty about evaluating the evidence that's clearly been missing for the last 2.5 years and for probably the last 2.5 decades. But Dr. Neil Oliver is going to give us an understanding of what it's going to take to get out of this death spiral that we are in.
It's hard to think the unthinkable, but there comes a time when there's nothing else for it. People raised to trust the powers that be, who have assumed, like I once did, that the state, regardless of its political flavour at any given moment, is essentially benevolent and well-meaning, will naturally try and keep that assumption of benevolence in mind when trying to make sense of what's going on around them. people like us, you and me, raised in the understanding that we are free, that we have inalienable rights, and that the institutions of this country have our best interests at heart, will tend to tie ourselves in knots rather than contemplate the idea those authorities might actually be working against us now. I took that thought of benevolent, well-meaning authority for granted for most of my life. God help me. Not to put too fine a point on it, I was as gullible as the next chump. A couple of years ago, however, I began to think the unthinkable. And with every passing day, it becomes more and more obvious to me that we are no longer being treated as individuals entitled to try and make the most of our lives, but as a barn full of battery hens, just another product to be bought and sold down the river. Let me put it another way. If you've been driving yourself almost demented in an effort to think the best of those in charge, those in senior positions in government, those in charge of the great institutions of state, those running the big corporations, but finding it increasingly impossible to do so, then the solution to the problem might be to turn your point of view through 180 degrees and accept, however unwillingly, that we are, how best to put this, being taken for a ride. When you find a stranger's hand on your wallet in the inside pocket of your jacket, rather than trying to persuade yourself he's only making sure it doesn't fall out, it might be more straightforward to draw the conclusion you're in the process of being robbed. Once the scales fall from a person's eyes, the resultant clarity of sight is briefly overwhelming. Or it's like being handed a skeleton key that opens every locked door, or access to a Rosetta Stone that translates every word into a language instantly understood. Take the energy crisis. If you felt the blood drain from your face at the prospect of bills rising from hundreds to several thousands of pounds while reading about energy companies doubling their profits overnight, while being commanded to subsidise so-called renewables that are anything but green, while listening to this politician or that renew their vows to the ruinous fantasies of net zero and Agenda 2030, while knowing that the electricity for electric cars comes in the main and most reliably from fossil fuels, if you can't make sense of it all and just know that it adds up to a future in which you might have to choose between eating and heating, then treat yourself to the gift of understanding that the powers that be fully intend that we should have less heat and less fuel, and that in the planned future, only the rich will have cars anyway. The plan is not to fix it. The plan is to break it and leave it broken. If you struggle to think the best of the world's richest, vacuous, self-obsessed A-list celebrities among them, endlessly circling the planet on private jets and super yachts so as to attend get-togethers where they might pontificate to us lowly proles about how we must give up our cars and occasional holiday flights, even meat on the dinner table. If you wonder how they have the unmitigated gall, then isn't it easier simply to accept that their honestly declared and advertised intention is that their luxurious and pampered lives will continue as before while we are left hungry, cold and mostly unwashed in our unheated homes? Here's the thing. If any leader or celeb honestly meant a word of their sermons about CO2 and the rest, then they would obviously lead by example. They would be first of all of us, willingly giving up international travel altogether. They would downsize to modest homes warmed by heat pumps. They would eschew all energy but that from the sun and the wind. They would eat with relish bugs and plants. They would resort to walking, bicycles and public transport. If net zero and the rest was about the good of the planet and not about clearing the skies and the beaches of scum like us, don't you think those sainted politicians and A-listers would be lighting the way for us by their own example? If the way of life they preach to us was worth living, wouldn't they be living it already? Perhaps you heard Bill Gates say private jets are his guilty pleasure. And how about food, and more particularly the predicted shortage of it? The suits and CEOs blame it all on Vladimir Putin. But if the countries of the world are truly running out of food, why is our government offering farmers hundreds of thousands of pounds to get out of the industry and sell their land to transnational corporations for use or disuse unknown? Why aren't we as a society doing what our parents and grandparents did during World War II and digging for victory? Why is the government intent on turning a third of our fertile soil over to rewilding schemes that make life better only for the beavers? Why aren't we looking across the North Sea towards the Netherlands, where a WEF-infected administration is bullying farmers off their land altogether, forcing them to cull half the national herd? Those Dutch farmers are among the most productive and knowledgeable in the world, holding in their heads and hands the answers to all manner of questions about how best to produce food. And yet their government is so intent on scaring them out of the business. The administration is bullying farmers off their land altogether, forcing them to cull half the national herd. Those Dutch farmers are among the most productive and knowledgeable in the world, holding in their heads and hands the answers to all manner of questions about how best to produce food. And yet their government is so intent on scaring them out of the business that a teenage boy in a tractor taking part in a protest to defend ancient rights and traditions was fired on by police. Why do you think it matters so much to the government of the second most productive population of farmers in the world to gut and fillet that industry? Why? Why have similar protests in countries all across Europe and the wider world been largely ignored by the mainstream media, a media that would have crawled on its hands and knees over broken glass just to report on a BLM protester opening a bag of non-binary crisps? Why the silence on the attack on farming? And while we're on the subject of farmland ownership, why is computer salesman Bill Gates buying so much farmland in the US, more than a quarter of a million acres in 19 states at the last count, while simultaneously promoting the production and sale of fake meat? And why have so many small planes crashed into massive food processing plants in the US, sparking fires and thereby hobbling the production and distribution of yet more of the very stuff of life? Why is this happening to farmers and farming all across the hitherto developed world? Isn't the simple, obvious answer, the answer that makes most sense and that is staring us in our trusting faces, that power for the power hungry has always rested most effectively upon control of food and its supply? Why are the powers that be attributing this to a cost of living crisis, when everyone with two brain cells to rub together can see it's a cost of lockdown crisis, the inevitable consequence of shutting down the whole country, indeed the whole world, for the best part of 2 years? Soaring inflation, rising interest rates, disrupted supply chains. Might they be calling it a cost of living crisis as part of their barefaced attempt to distract us from the fact that while ordinary individuals face a life and death struggle in the coming months, the corporations have celebrated their share of the greatest transfer of wealth in history? Doesn't that seem more likely? However unthinkable, might it not be more compelling to ask why our government and governments around the world have effectively stood by and held the coats of huge corporations while those money magnets pulled almost all of the world's wealth into their already creaking coffers? Are our governments more interested in enabling, in aiding and abetting the rich than in lifting so much as a finger to protect our livelihoods, our ways of life? I'm only asking. What about the money in our pockets? Why is it getting harder and harder to use good old cash, notes and coins? Why are we being nudged further and further away from spending power we can see and hold and towards a digital alternative that exists only on the hard drives of the banks that run the world? Why is that, do you think? Rather than dismiss as yet another conspiracy theory the idea of cash being ultimately replaced with transactions based on the exchange of what amount to glorified food stamps that will only be accepted if our social credit score demonstrates that we've been obedient girls or boys, how about taking the leap and focusing on the blatantly obvious, that if we're not free to buy whatever and whenever we please, free of the surveillance and snooping of governments and the banks that run them, then we have absolutely no freedom at all? And while we're on the subject of money and banks, why not pause to notice something else that's glaringly obvious, which is to say that the currencies of the West are teetering on the abyss, and that one bank after another is revealed to those who are bothering to watch as being as close to bankruptcy as it's possible to be without actually falling over the edge. Then there's the so-called vaccines for COVID. I deliberately say so-called because by now it should be clear to all but the willfully blind that those injections do not work as advertised. You can still contract the virus, still transmit the virus, still get sick from the virus, and still die of the virus. Denmark has dropped their use for under-18s. All across the world, every day, more evidence emerges, however grudgingly, however much the various complicit authorities and big pharma companies might hate to admit it, of countless deaths and injuries caused by those medical procedures. And yet here in Britain, and just about everywhere else, governments continue to try and get those needles into as many arms as possible, even the arms of the smallest and youngest. The ripe stink of corruption is everywhere. A trusted authority for most of my life. Now I ask myself on a daily basis how I ignored the stench for so long.
So again, that's Neil Oliver. He's obviously, as you could tell, because he was talking with a British accent as well as talking about pounds. He is over in England, And I think that 10-minute monologue is a fantastic summary of the current state of things. And I think one of the most important points he makes is at the beginning, to think the unthinkable. Many of us have grown up thinking that though our governments or bureaucracies are somewhat corrupt, definitely lazy, on the whole, their purpose, at least in the past, has been to ultimately try something with good intentions. But it appears that thinking the unthinkable is what's required now, which is to say that our governments and the people that run them, combined with a lot of interest from many different forces, have no interest in doing what's best for the individual, but instead treat the individual, the thinker, the person, the human, as something to be exchanged or bought and sold. And that is a hard pill to swallow, but once you swallow it, a lot of what's going on makes a lot more sense. What do you think, Stuart?
Right. Bureaucracies will always protect bureaucracies. Public health, the public health entities in our country clearly do not care for, actually it seems like they despise, they disdain the concept of the individual. The individual relationship between a physician and a patient, the individual autonomy of a person, to the point that we never have had for these experimental biological agents an informed consent. A true informed consent in the middle of the biggest trial in human history. And these bureaucrats and it's getting to this point where it's undeniable to call these people evil. These people in charge have been shoving down our throats, or more appropriately, shoving into our arms, a poison. And the startling statement that Dr. Oliver just made, I think, is important, and that is that in the months ahead, the deaths and injuries in the months ahead are going to be astounding. That brings us back to the threat of a virus, which a six-month-old has zero potential risk of dying from. And now, here in the last month, they've approved it. And they're trying to get it onto the forced, mandatory, if you will, a vaccine schedule for toddlers. It is absolutely amazing we've gotten to this point, and Dr. Oliver explained it much better than I. He made several important points that bring the whole disaster into focus. The comprehensive nature, which these people have been planning for decades, and what they're foisting upon us. And it's what's so sad is the bureaucrats. I live in a capital city of Montgomery. People outside the capitals don't understand the distress that they should have of their government. People that live in the capital, I would dare say, have a more acute awareness of it, because a lot of them are the bureaucrats that are forced to implement it. And so I think the best example of that was last winter. A doctor in Birmingham said, why is it that more the city in Alabama that has the least uptake of the nurses of the vaccine in the nurses is Montgomery? I think that's very telling. The people here instinctively know that the government is not to be trusted, as our founders of our country understood that we should all have that perspective. And it's very sad that this guy and the majority, the large majority of Western civilization has gotten to the point at some level of believing the government has our best interest at heart. They do not.
Agreed. And I think that's the pill we all have to swallow. It's a pill that I didn't require me to swallow. I grew up with a father that always had a bit of distrust and especially elected leaders, mainly because that was just the bent of man. But we will be back. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley on America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. Let me tell you, this is an innovation. The Genesis Fogger uses HOCl. This is a form of hypochlorite. This is a powerful disinfectant that is tried and true. It's for sure kills SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 virus, but many other pathogens, including bacterial as well as mycofungal pathogens. Enter the Genesis Fogger. It is a powerful mister. It's a dry mist, and it does cleanse the air. It does have a tremendous disinfectant capability for the room. It's used for industrial purposes and elsewhere, but now it's brought to you in your home to better defend you against SARS-CoV-2, the virus, COVID-19, as well as a host of other pathogens. So if you go to the promotional code and enter in OUTLOUD, you can receive a discount off of your first purchase. So go to the Genesis Fogger website and take a look at it. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCl is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCl and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products, toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse with Dr. Jordan Vaughn. I am Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Today, we're really going square at the issues of the dishonesty, duplicity, evil of what's been what's transpired. We start out today talking about the CDC. We mentioned earlier in the program how the CDC just changed a few major things last week in statements that were not publicized, not really covered by the press at all. And they're stark reminders of how duplicitous these people have been. Fauci, as we've known, has lied under oath in before Congress multiple times, and the duplicity and deception of those in charge, as Dr. Neil Oliver explained, we need to stop trusting these people and demanding that they be removed from authority and be held to account.
I think the most important thing, as Neil points out, Stuart, is we should stop giving them the benefit of the doubt, which meaning in the past, as Neil said, you kind of assumed even when they messed up, it wasn't intentional. But it doesn't seem that way, nor have they earned that after the last 2 years. They should be called to the table for every proclamation. We should not be giving them any latitude to basically lie to us again, or basically misinform us at least.
Yeah, our state health officer, as you know, Jordan, is on Capital Journal, which is a PBS public service that he does every Friday night for the last 2 years for about 10 minutes. And it's amazing how he continues to parrot these disastrous policies. And the guy that's asking him clearly never went to journalism school or never had any amount of genuine interest in delving into issues that are so transparently obvious and have been so disastrous. Here is the guy that's in charge of our state talking continuously every Friday night he has him on. And he's never really challenging him with the obvious disastrous decisions that his department has been foisting upon us. I was proud of our governor. A couple of weeks ago, he mandated that, well, his office, the Alabama Department of Public Health, said, we want to normalize masking, to which the governor a couple of days later responded with, we'll normalize masking when they start selling Rocky Mountain oysters at the beach. The point is, was that challenged in the media? Was the guy on the public service host of the program ever digging into his abuses, lies, deceptions, misstatements? Oh, well, he just kind of waves it away with a quick deflection. Never really dug into. This is a disaster. I think it's hard to swallow our former President Trump's demeanor. It's hard to find it to be palatable. But the fact is, he exposed the media in our country for what it is. It is a shill. It is a very wealthy group of people who think they can dictate to us how we need to change our nature to better benefit them, as Neil Oliver explained. We do not need to trust these people any longer. It is way past time that they be held to account at least in the public opinion square of a public opinion.
Yeah, and especially given the fact that their expertise has been shown to be a liability, not a benefit. I mean, I'm not questioning that they're experts in what they are experts in, but it doesn't seem to help them in any way dictate what's going to happen. I think that's one of the biggest problems I've had with medical doctors is, for the most part, very few of them are good at thinking about things to come and about new scenarios. A lot of them are very good at establishing a protocol, a diagnosis, a workup of something that's known. And they may be very good at teasing out something that's known. They are awful, and maybe even worse than the average person, at thinking about things in a new way for a new disease process. And I think that's, there's no question that's okay.
But the man we started with, the doctor that was appearing before the California Senate at the beginning of this program today, and we would encourage you to have your doctor listen at least to this last segment if he doesn't want to listen to the whole hour today. But encourage him to listen to this last segment, because what that doctor said, the three words you never hear any of these fools talk about or say is, I don't know. And when you're in that position of I don't, when you're in the position of not being able to say that, you will always, you're always chasing your tail. When you don't, when you can't stop yourself to say, wait a minute, where am I going with this, with whatever issue you're going, you're trying to deal with in the long term? If you can't say, if you can't back up and say, wait a minute, what are we doing and where, why are we taking these directives at face value when we've been wrong time and time and time again? Maybe I need to just say, I don't know. Humble yourself so that then you can start assessing the situation honestly, which well, they have
you
not
can't
done.
Say, I don't know, because it hurts your feelings. Just shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's impossible. All I'm going to do is I was so encouraged a couple of weeks ago, a prominent doctor in our community called me, and we were friends, been over to my house, been to his house several times. And, in the last year or two, really hadn't heard from him. He wasn't return calls, but he said, Stuart, do you feel vindicated? That's how he opened up the dialogue. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, looks like what you've been saying about this COVID stuff has been right on the mark. And I was like, well, let me explain something. The Lord gave me peace 2 years ago, two years ago in May of 2020. That this was far bigger than me or any other individual, Fauci or anybody else. This is good. This is so important. This is not of me, of course, but I said, this is so important and so much more important than me that I just hope to make a difference for the benefit of people. And it's not something I have to receive kudos for, but I thanked him for it, of course. But that led to a 45-minute conversation.
Yeah, I don't think we're in the business necessarily of vindication. I think people that have tried to harm us, I hope for vindication. But
yeah,
us being correct, I always tell it stinks for the people that were hurt.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to be correct. I do want to be correct for my patients to protect them, but it would be a lot better to live in a world that the reality of what's been done doesn't exist. And everything that was proclaimed 2 years ago did happen. The problem was, is we don't live in that world. We live in a world where there's kind of understanding of biological processes. We understand RNA viruses. We understand a lot of things. And unfortunately, a lot of that was ignored or was just forgotten. And I think
And this is important. Getting back to the science, which is what you and I love to talk about the most, probably, is, and today we've kind of delved off our normal, but for a good reason. But the science is these vaccines, as they're called, even though they're not, the injuries coming down the pipe, down the pike for us and dealing with them in the coming months and years probably, are serious. People need to stop taking these vaccines. Doctors need to be educated on how to address this spikeopathy. And we need to make treatments readily, cheaply available that have been around for decades, like ivermectin. But we've got to stop, because the damage, we're at the tip of the iceberg, we're afraid. The evidence is clear. We talked about it 3 or 4 weeks ago with the important paper, July the 11th, Dr. Vandenbosch, Geert, G-E-E-R-T, Vandenbosch. Anyways, we've got serious challenges, medical issues, health issues related to this, these jabs headed our way in full force. They're already here. The evidence of them is already here. We've got to stop the jabs.
So here's something I was reading through a vaccine they call it vaccine-associated myocarditis. I would call it vaccine-induced myocarditis. But it was a couple case reports, and this just shows you what we're up against, Stuart, okay? Let me read you the last, or the sentence in the conclusion, okay? And again, this was a paper of multiple case reports of vaccine-associated myocarditis in young adults. The conclusion, mRNA vaccines have saved billions of lives since being introduced in December 2020. So even if they save lives, just the fact that this slipped through peer review, okay, is just so incredible. Billions of lives? Yeah. Can you explain to me how that is even possible? Unless saving lives of people on other planets?
Well, right. Billions of people. Well, they are obviously not talking about what has transpired in the last 2.5 years. They are looking forward to the future. So they're, I guess, admitting somehow that this is
have saved billions of lives.
Yeah.
I mean, how can this go through peer review and somebody not look at that? Even somebody who's the biggest proponent of vaccines, okay, and say you're off by a magnitude of 1,000.
Well, they did say that these vaccines were 95% effective. Remember, they swore to us on that it was 95%. Now, 95% effective at what? Well, it's certainly not deaths, because that was not what they studied. I think it was mild symptoms, which was, of course, a lie. If you look at the data, that is clearly not the case. That was never the case.
And did more people die before or after the introduction of the vaccine?
Unfortunately, after from COVID and other issues, but the myocarditis is real. It's not just in young males. It is throughout.
And I don't think it's associated, do you? I think it's induced.
The science shows that exactly. The science is clear on that. It is not associated. It is due to, because as we know, in any trial, if something untoward happens to the recipient of that agent, it is that agent until proven otherwise. It's the reverse of the U.S. court system, where you're innocent until proven guilty. And these people have got to take pause and start to realize that the science is clear. The science is in. There is no way to accommodate their perspective any longer. These vaccines and the spikeopathy that it causes are killing, maiming millions.
Yeah, and the funny thing is their second sentence, therefore, we believe that the benefits of mRNA vaccine outweigh the risk of COVID-19 infection. Okay, so I would agree. If it had saved billions of lives, then I guess your second sentence is correct. But it hasn't. Not even close. And not only that, your case study is about young people that had no benefit and would have never had a benefit if you look at the paper, and they were harmed. Okay, so you cannot say that you believe the benefits outweigh the risk when the person that you're discussing in this case report, a young man, a couple young men that have vaccine induced, or they say associated myocarditis, and will have lifelong heart damage because of this mRNA vaccine or injection, and had no, if you look at the studies, they would have never had a benefit from this thing. So again, that's what we're up against. It's hard. I don't know that they had, maybe it's that the journal required this statement at the end, because again, it's very hard to get published about the damage that this is causing, but it would seem that, And not only that, they go on to say there's growing evidence to suggest a causal relationship between these vaccines and myocarditis. There's growing evidence.
That's a huge statement.
If you're looking at billions of lives saved, I guess it takes you a million harmed of a young adults before you'll actually say, hey, there's something going on here.
Yeah, let's hope that there are doctors out there that have the humility to listen to our podcast today. And I would ask them this question. This is the United Kingdom, their data. None of this is our data. It's their data. How many people under the age of 25 in the first 2 years of this pandemic, under the age of 25, had zero comorbidities for this. How many in the entire United Kingdom died from COVID in the first 2 years? Think about that. Ask yourself that question. What would be an appropriate number for us to then force them to get these jabs? The answer is two. Two people under the age of 25. That is a non-risk. That is zero. Statistically, that is zero, unless unfortunately you're in those two families, of course. But the fact is that this is unconscionable. Please start using those three words that we began with from that Senate testimony in California from that esteemed doctor. The three words, I don't know.
And three more words, Stuart, think the unthinkable.
Right.
So both of those are true right now. We've got to say, well, you know what? I don't know. And the people in charge may not have your best interest as an individual with certain unalienable rights in their heart. And they're not looking out for you. They might be looking out for themselves, or at this point, who knows? So again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley. We are so thankful you were here this week, and hope to hear from you in the message boards. You can go to AmericaOutloud.com, ask us any questions. Those will be forwarded to us. We are thankful for our listeners. We are thankful that you are willing to admit, I don't know, and also to go ahead and think the unthinkable. Until next week, this is America Out Loud Pulse. Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart.